Thank you all for attending this presentation and this session today. As you can see, my title will be talking about compilation and analysis of nearly half a century of drainage water quality research. We have a long history of artificial agricultural drainage in this country and in Canada. In fact, we have drainage projects and drainage legislations on the books that predate the signing of the Declaration of Independence in the United States. Clearly, artificial drainage is an important part of our history and will likely be an important part of our future because ag drainage improves crop growth and reduces risk in terms of timeliness of field operations. But of course, ag drainage also changes the natural hydrology and in doing so serves as a conduit for nutrients to move downstream. Now, the extent and the speed at which nutrients move downstream in ag drainage depends on both controllable and uncontrollable factors. Well, we've been doing drainage for a long time in this part of the world. We've also been doing drainage water quality research for a long time. And so with this study, we wanted to look back over at about 50 years of drainage water quality research and really try to pull out those important controllable and uncontrollable factors impacting drainage nitrogen loss. To do so, we started out by looking at over 400 drainage water quality studies from around the world. And from there, we pared down to 91 journal publications that included a total of 1,279 site years of drainage nutrient load data that met our criteria for inclusion in the MANAGE water quality database. MANAGE is the Measured Annual Nutrient Loads from Agricultural Environments database, which is a free and publicly available database hosted by my collaborator on this project, Dr. Darren Harmel, at USDA ARS in Temple, Texas. Previously, MANAGE contained over 1,800 watershed years of agricultural runoff nutrient and sediment loads, forest runoff nutrient and sediment load data, and then with this work, we were adding in a new drain nutrient load table. To be included in the MANAGE database, you can see on the lower left there, we were working with some existing selection criteria because it was an existing database. Studies had to be peer reviewed. We had a minimum study size or plot size to be included. Importantly, we heard a talk just now from Denmark, but MANAGE only includes North American studies. And then also importantly, that next bullet, we had to have at least 1 year of data. You can see in the title itself, MANAGE is measured annual nutrient load. So we needed at least 1 year of nutrient load data. Now, once we felt like a study met all of our selection criteria, we really tried to pull every piece of potentially useful information out of the study. And you can see some examples there on the lower right of the screen. MANAGE has over 100 fields of potential information that you can enter to store. So things like yield, soil type, obviously water quality data. We wanted MANAGE to be as comprehensive as possible. So once we had the database created, I wanted to look over what I consider to be the biggest uncontrollable factor impacting drainage nitrogen losses, and that is precipitation. Across the entire database, all regions and all site years, my median precipitation was 820 millimeters. My mean precipitation across the entire database was 850 millimeters of precipitation. And so I laid those two numbers over the entire database, which is what you see down at the bottom, and I said, I'm going to call you a dry year if you're less than 820 millimeters of precipitation, and you're going to be considered a wet year if you're more than 850 millimeters of precipitation. I realize that's a very, very simple way to try to bin out the data, but I wanted a simple way to try to get to potential water limitation impacts on cropping systems. Most of our data ended up being non-normally distributed, so we used these two tests for our statistical analysis. Those tests are based on rank, and so we'll be talking primarily about median values rather than mean values. So once we had the database created, our first kind of analysis was just to look and see where has all this research been done. Not surprisingly, looking at the map on the left, the majority of the dissolved in load site years or the nitrate load site years were coming from the Midwest. And we had nearly 1,000 site years of information for nitrate loads. In terms of total nitrogen loads, which is the map on the right, we had relatively many fewer site years. And actually, about half of those site years came from one study in Canada published in 1970. Keeping with our the geography theme, this table was actually a comment that we had from a reviewer. I don't know who you are. I suspect you might be in the crowd. If you are, thank you for this comment. It was an excellent comment. So we binned out the data into four separate regions. And then starting with precipitation, we did see statistically significant differences in the median precipitation from the four regions, which is not surprising. And if you look at a precip map across North America, this actually matches up really well. These numbers match up really well, which is good that our data passed kind of the sniff test in that regard. Moving to the middle column, drain discharge, we saw a statistically significant greater drainage discharge from the southeast compared with those three other regions, which is probably related to the fact that they also received higher precipitation. And then that last column, dissolved inload, the big difference there was that the western Midwest states of Iowa, Illinois, and Minnesota had a significantly greater drainage inload than the eastern Canadian provinces. Now, I dug into that a little bit more, and I realized that 93% of the site years from the western Midwest states were either in corn or soybean, whereas only 54% of the eastern Canadian site years were corn or soybean. So there's likely more diverse cropping going on in those research studies. We'll get into the cropping system a little bit more in a couple slides. Now, coming back to that biggest uncontrollable factor of precipitation, and again looking across the entire database here, starting with the graph on top, we found that wet years had greater drainage discharge than dry years. And I'll pause for a second to try to avoid any tomatoes you throw at me, because that's absolutely not a surprising finding. More rain, more snow, more drainage. That's a no-brainer. Another way to look at this, though, is by looking at the graph on the bottom, which is percent of precipitation that leaves our fields as drainage. We saw, again, here between wet and dry years, a statistically significant difference between those binned out wet years and the binned out dry years. So in a wet year, our median was 21% of precip occurs as drainage, compared to the dry year, only 18% of precip ended up as drainage. And that likely has to do with the water balance in those dry years. Likely a greater percentage of precipitation is going to some of those other processes like crop uptake in a dry year. Now, what does this mean for water quality? I'll again pause for you to get out your tomatoes, because not surprisingly, wet years had greater dissolved nitrogen loads than dry years. What I was surprised about was that the median in the wet years wasn't just a little bit higher than the median in the dry years, it was more than double. So I think that's very important that there is such a big difference. However, that leaves me a little bit conflicted too, because again, precipitation isn't something that we can necessarily control. So now we can talk about factors that we can control, like cropping system. Starting with the graph in the upper right, those are the dry years. The graph at the bottom is the wet years. And we have the same five cropping systems across both graphs: continuous corn, corn-soybean corn phase, corn-soybean-soybean phase, alfalfa, and then grass, which in the database included miscanthus, switchgrass, prairie, or sometimes just a grass treatment in the studies. I'm not quite sure what they meant. But most generally, across these two graphs, what you can generally see is that the first three bars, those annual crops, generally had a higher dissolved nitrogen load than those last two bars, which are the perennial crops, the alfalfa and the grass. This is particularly apparent in the wet years. Those first three bars are notably higher than those last two bars. Also, digging into the statistics a little bit more, looking at the two corn systems, going from a dry year to a wet year with those two corn treatments resulted in a statistically significant increase in dissolved nitrogen load. So those B's in the top graph became A's in the bottom graph, going from wet year to dry year. That's a difference that we didn't see in terms of the perennial crop. So there was no significant increase in drainage nitrogen load going from a dry year to a wet year with those perennials. And so not only do the perennials typically have a lower load, but they also provide potentially some sort of buffering in these days of highly variable climate. Digging into the corn cropping system a little bit more, I wanted to think about nitrogen losses in terms of yield scaling. And yield scaling is something that's done sometimes in the greenhouse gas literature in terms of, for example, nitrous oxide emitted per bushel of corn produced. Now, I'm not necessarily suggesting that we start representing drainage data in this way, but it is an interesting way to think about efficiency, for example, of nitrogen fertilizer application. Across nitrogen fertilizer application, and those rates are in kilograms of N applied per hectare. The only significant difference that we had between bars was that first bar where it says median of 5 kilograms dissolved N loss per megagram corn yield, and then that fifth bar where the median is 1.3. And so that seems to indicate that the most efficient N application rate for corn following soybeans is right around that 175 to 200, efficient being defined in terms of drainage nitrogen loss per corn yield. Now that seemed a little bit high in terms of an application rate for corn following soybeans, but I think that might, looking back at the corn N rate calculator, that might depend on where you are within the Midwest. One of the best things about a study like this, a big database development study, is that it allows you to look back at the scientific literature, evaluate where gaps are, so that we can point the way forward for future research, future drainage research. Now the top conclusion, we need more long-term studies. That's pretty much the standard conclusion for any type of agriculture or ecology meta-analysis. Research conclusion calling for more research, which is a job security thing, I'm sure. But moving into specifically recommendations for future drainage, we really, in the database, didn't have hardly any information for newly drained areas. We've heard some great talks today from the Red River Valley, great talk just now from Missouri, and those were areas where we really hardly had any information. We could also use more information in the database on ditch drain areas. I think we had, out of the 1,279 site years, 56 site years for ditch drainage, and we did try to include both subsurface and surface, and that really was surprising to me because just about anywhere you have tile drains, you also have ditches. So I think increased understanding of nutrient transport, nutrient transformations, and ditches would be very useful. Then lastly, while we're talking today about nitrogen, we also included phosphorus in the database. We just had relatively many fewer site years for phosphorus compared to nitrogen. There's a lot of great phosphorus transport work going on in drainage, and we hope to continue to add to the database as more information becomes available. So in conclusion, kind of a tomato talk, not many surprises. Wetter years and cropping systems matter for dissolved N loss or for nitrogen loss in drainage. If you're interested in what I'm talking about, we have two publications out. The first one in JEQ is really our nitrogen analysis. If you're interested in kind of the hydrology, the wet year, dry year, tillage impacts, drainage design impacts, that's that second bullet, which is our ag water management paper. And then lastly, I will mention, Manage Again is free and publicly available. So if you have some ideas for analysis with this data set, please feel free to download it and start playing with it. And with that, I thank you for your time. I welcome any questions.
Questions for Laura?
If you look at the soil organic matter differences between the region of Canada and Midwest, are the same or different?
Yeah, I didn't really do any analysis on the soils. I did find that I felt like soils information wasn't as reported as thoroughly as it could have been looking across all the drainage studies. You know, I think ag engineers tend to focus on the water and sometimes forget to report some of the soil characteristics, which would be helpful. So,
but if they have the name, you can go back and NRCS
yep.
book.
Yep, and that would be a lot of work. But you can do it. Vantage is out there. It's free and publicly available. That's a great idea.
Other questions? Katie?
So for the wet and dry years, is that because of the significant difference in how the water is, there's more water leaving in a wet year, does that mean that the drainage system needs to be managed differently in a wet year? And would there be other recommendations of co-practices in a wet year to work with that?
That's definitely the next step of where now we have this information and we've done the analysis, so what are the recommendations for practices? And I think practices that are particularly effective in wet years are going to become more important, like a wetland, because that provides flood retention, you know, but then in the dry year, the wetland, you know, isn't going to be relatively as helpful. Things like controlled drainage, also the perennials, you know, that's kind kind of a bummer conclusion because perennials don't feed a whole lot of people, but managing for those wet years is going to be critical.
Okay.